Welcome to Sparking Genius, hosted by the Dwight Global Network of Schools, a podcast series exploring what the future of education holds.
Welcome to Sparking Genius, the podcast where we dive deep into the dynamic and ever-evolving world of global education. I'm your host, Deanne Drew, Head of School at Dwight School New York and Global Education Director for the Dwight Network of Schools. In each episode, we explore how innovative ideas, technologies, and thought leaders are shaping the future of education worldwide. Today's episode is a special one as we turn the spotlight on the educators who spark genius in the classroom every day. In 2024, Dwight launched the Torchbearer Award to recognize faculty and staff across our global network who exemplify the values and practices of the Dwight Global Network of Schools. Out of an incredible pool of nominees, two outstanding educators stood out, and I'm honored to be joined by our inaugural Torchbearer Award recipients, Zach Shapiro, a beloved math teacher from Dwight, New York, and Javier Sanchez, an inspiring language arts teacher from Dwight, London. Their passion for teaching and their innovative approaches to engaging students truly embody the spirit of Dwight's global mission. In this episode, we'll explore what it means to be an effective and inspiring educator today. How do great teachers create meaningful connections with students? And what strategies help learners develop confidence and curiosity? How can educators across different disciplines and cultures share best practices to enhance learning worldwide? For the first time on Sparking Genius, we're diving deep into the art and science of teaching through the voices of those who live it every day. Let's get started. Welcome, Zach and Javier, to our Sparking Genius podcast. We are so excited to have you here. And I'd love to start by asking you both, how long have you been in education and what was your journey to becoming a teacher? And Javier, I might start with you first.
Okay. So first of all, thank you for having me here today. It's really exciting to be part of this experience. Answering your question to how long I've been teaching, I think it's been over 20 years now. Don't remember exactly, but I would say 23, 24 years. And how I became to be a teacher. Well, first, I studied English and literature at university. And at the time, like, teaching was considered to be maybe like a safe option in terms of opening opportunities for you as well when it came to having jobs. So I decided to do the training to become a teacher. And then I realized once I started having the teaching practice with the students that that was something that really suited me. So that's how, in essence, how I became a teacher.
That's great. That's great. And how about you, Zach?
Yeah. Hey, Deanne. Thanks for having me in the podcast. I've been teaching for about a dozen years now, but my journey was a little bit different. I actually went to college with a focus on journalism. I loved broadcasting growing up. I actually was part of a radio club in high school and did some writing for local paper in high school. And so I figured that would be where I would end up. But through my time in college, I found that I had a really strong passion working with kids. I felt it was such a rewarding experience and one that just could not be replicated in any other job. And so despite all that time spending working on broadcasting, even a little bit of finance, I took a full 180, ended up applying to grad schools where I ended up going here in the city and then started my career from there. So definitely a little bit of a different path, but one I'm really happy I went on. It was very rewarding.
Lots of different pathways to become teachers, but I do think that essence of what you're talking about of wanting to really work with children and enjoying that experience is so important. Can either of you point to an experience that really shaped the kind of teacher and your teaching philosophy, like what kind of teacher you are today? Is there any particular moment or experience or something that you studied that you thought, yeah, that's the kind of teacher I want to be, or I want to keep doing this with students? Maybe Javier, have you got anything?
Yeah, I would say that more than pointing out to a single experience, I would say experiences And it is because in my long career as well, I have come to realize as well the need that we have as teachers to adapt to the classes, to the students that we teach. I've been incredibly fortunate to see in a variety of settings, like really, really different. So I have taught in state schools, I have taught in private schools, I've taught in religious schools, like single sex, like mixed sex, then as well in grammar schools, like highly aspirational and academic as well. So I would say that from all of these experiences, you actually have the opportunity to reflect on what you do, why you do it, and most importantly, the need that you've got to listen and to adapt to the students that you've got. I think the core values will always stay the same, but how you interact with your students and your approach to teaching, it will vary. So I think is that from every single experience that I had in the past and that I continue to have, I always take that as a learning opportunity as well.
That's great. How about you, Zach?
Yeah, for me, I would say it was probably when I went from my first job to my second job. I was an associate with elementary students and I was transitioning to becoming a math teacher in middle school. And so that was quite a switch, being in a room of, you know, second graders where I was just helping them get down their work in different subjects, to being the person in charge and running a class of 20 students. And so for me, I really leaned on the principal at the time, the middle school principal, who really pushed me to really engage with the students and really form connections with them, because he felt like having that would get them to buy into me as a new teacher in the school. It was a very different culture than I was used to. And so I quickly started to form a relationship with those students, spend time with them outside the classroom, whether it was stopping by at lunch, coming by their basketball games, just engaging them in the hallways. And I think for me, that started to get me more comfortable with the new role, get the kids more comfortable with me as a teacher, and sort of set the tone for the class and how I wanted the kids to feel. And I think that really made a big difference in not just that job, but my future career in teaching.
That's great, Zach. And you're talking about, at least in this experience, a middle school administrator that sort of helped you on that pathway. To both of you, I think it's really important. I know I've come across a lot of mentors or even just teachers that I've really looked up to. And as I was going along my career, I would sort of either mimic and copy things that they were doing or ask them for their guidance. Have you had any particular mentor along your journey that really stands out that has helped you become the teacher you are today?
You know, again, for me, Deanna, I would go back to that middle school principal I worked with at the school in Brooklyn. He'd been teaching for over 20 years. And again, he felt like, you know, for me being new in a middle school setting, it was really important to set the tone with the students in terms of my, you know, interest in their backgrounds and their hobbies. And so I think just being there for me, coming in the classroom once or twice a week to watch me and give me tips and to help me manage students was usually beneficial. And I appreciated that so much and really helped me carry my journey through teaching. Yeah.
How about you, Javier?
I have had different mentors when I went through becoming a teacher at university. And of course, in every school that I worked at, there's always been a person there in terms of the induction or trying to help you, you know, establish yourself and settle in the school. Something which I don't know if it is quite personal to me or if it is a little bit strange is that really, I really look up to different people. I'm quite observational, perhaps that is the word. And this doesn't only apply to school leaders. And of course it does as well, because obviously that is a good reference for you, you know, in terms of, you know, what you are aspiring to. But that also relates to my own colleagues, to the students as well, to a certain extent, you know. It's like I pick different things. You put it quite well when you said like trying to mimic. Okay. Obviously it has to be something personal to you, but there's certainly some attributes, like some person you may think this person is great at communicating. So what is it that they are doing? You know, that why do you think that they are so successful at doing that? And then I try to incorporate that into my teaching and, you know, who I am as a person. But yeah, like certainly in my career and at Dwight, there's a lot of people that, you know, that are really good models for me. So I think that's what I would do. And what I really, really like as well is when the mentors that are more like coaching you And it is like they ask the right questions, but they don't impose, they don't see themselves as, you know, I don't have all of the answers, but maybe you do. And asking the right questions and allowing you to try out new things. And perhaps I would say actually, like, they're really good mentors if they believe in you and they believe you can do something. That is really, really important to me.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think the collaborative nature, I mean, even though I've got 30 years of education behind me, I'm always learning something new, regardless if it's a brand new teacher or someone with 20 years of experience. Everybody comes to the profession with these unique skill sets and ways to work with kids. And I really appreciate that in education. When you talk, it's great to hear you talking about how these mentors sort of helped you on your journey. Do you feel like you need to be a mentor now that you've got a good amount of time in the teaching field in education? Do you feel like a responsibility to help others and help them sort of navigate their path as a teacher?
I'm actually very lucky in that as a subject leader, that is part of my role as well. So, you know, it is you need to engage in these conversations, you know, with the teachers, with your team as well. And that conversation is quite rich. Of course, it will involve as well lesson observations, but the planning before those lesson observations is quite crucial as well. Just hearing from them is going back almost to the point that I made earlier. You know, I think it's very, very good when you do ask the right questions, when you get the teachers to come up with their own ideas, their own solutions to problems that they're having themselves with particular classes, with particular students. This idea of collaboration is key. So that's why as well, as a subject leader in our departmental meetings, as much as I can, obviously we've got constraints because we have so many things to go through. I love it when we do sessions on teaching and learning, basically based on teaching and learning and how much we learn from one another. And I totally agree with you. I've got teachers in my team that in certain things, in certain areas, they are really fantastic. And I take, you know, what they are doing or their approaches because I know it works with your students. So yeah, it's great. And I think everybody, we do have a certain responsibility to make sure that whatever we do, that we do well, that is passed on to other colleagues as well.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. You know, someone again has been teaching over a dozen years, definitely feel the need to share my knowledge, my background with other teachers. I always am welcoming teachers to my classroom to watch my lessons, see how I do things. And I love checking out other teachers and not even math teachers of other subjects, whether it's art, theater, science, doesn't matter, because it allows me just to see what they do differently, different modes of engagement, different ways they interact with the students, different models of teaching. But yeah, I do feel like it is our responsibility to look out for the teachers that are newer to the building and to make sure they feel comfortable and that they're finding their, you know, their self as a teacher. Like what makes them work well? What helps them connect with the students? What helps them get the materials across in the best possible way?
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think we all know globally, you know, there is a massive teacher shortage and trying to retain great teachers is becoming harder and harder. And you know, you've got such a wealth of experience and you're both torchbearer winners, either in your own countries, and Javier is our global torchbearer winner. What would you say to perhaps a younger teacher or someone who's thinking about going into education if they were listening? You know, what does success look like in your classroom? And when you're working with students in particular, what does it mean to be a successful teacher? And what are the things that you judge yourself by in regards to being successful as a teacher?
I mean, it is a really, really complex, because what do we mean by success? You know, but and obviously we that question could be a whole podcast on its own. But I suppose if we think about learning, teaching and learning, okay, so the students, if you have learned something, that means that you've got some knowledge that you didn't have before, or you've got some skills that you didn't have before. So I guess from the point of view of a language teacher myself, I think success means that these students, after, you know, a sequence of lessons, a unit, a whole year, I'm lucky enough as well that I get to see these students go through the whole of the MYP and their diploma, how they can actually use, in my case, Spanish and my language, in a range of situations with confidence as well, and see that sort of level that they've been able to acquire in the language. I think that is the best testament. It can objectively can be measured as well, because, you know, I was telling you earlier about how one of our students actually came to New York to study his degree, and he decided to do it combined with the Spanish, and that hasn't been an issue at all for him. So obviously that suggests to me that, you know, his educational journey has been very, very successful. Then obviously we've got formative assessment, informal assessment, like seeing the how students becoming confident in themselves as well, maybe working on specific issues or problems that we've got with learning and their personal targets to them, and how we can see them grow in those regards as well. But I suppose, as well as assessments and all that, that, you know, there is evidence, of course, but maybe that's an indication of how well they can do in an assessment, not necessarily how much learning they have acquired. I think is maybe not so tangible, but I think probably a good teacher knows when a student has learned.
Yeah. And for me, again, I say there were several areas to point to. I mean, engagement's certainly nice when kids are just following and taking notes. But for me, it's more they're asking the deeper questions, like the whys behind certain things, or looking to push their thinking more and even push me as a teacher in terms of my understanding of the material. And also for me, like just able to see the students working independently on topics, like not necessarily relying on a friend, relying on me, relying on a parent to help understand material is great. And yeah, of course, them scoring well on tests is also nice. But you know, again, more importantly for me is just are they thinking deeply? Are they really diving into the material and not just, you know, not taking it seriously? Yeah.
That's great. Sorry, Javier, were you saying something?
I want to say, I think you've made a really good point there as well. Just going beyond our own subjects, we want to create like lifelong learners as well. So we need to be able to support them as well to become independent learners as well, to use critical thinking, to try things that work for them as well, and to have those tools, because, you know, we're going to be a teacher for them, maybe just for 1 year, and then there's another teacher that is going to take over. So it is this idea as well, like with revision techniques, what is it that works really, really well for them? How do you make sure that actually they are in control of their own learning? Because we're just there to guide them, really.
Yeah, we're a facilitator, but there is something to be said about, and I'm picking pieces from both of you. I know you were talking, Javier, about getting that student's confidence, and Zach, you're talking about making sure that they're digging deeper. And I do think beyond the assessments, beyond obviously the data that we can get about them learning content and skills, it's that element of connecting where you are as a teacher, and you know it, you feel it when you're connecting with a student, and you're either subtly or directly changing the way they think about this subject or something that you are teaching them that is indelibly going to help them, right? And I know as a teacher, I'm always sort of like, oh, I can see the light bulb moment where that student hated Shakespeare, hated, didn't even want to come into the classroom, but is now rushing home to go on Netflix to watch all the different Shakespeare versions of that. And even and the assessment may not be great. The essay result may not be great. But as a teacher, there's something so fulfilling when you feel like you've made that leap, that someone is invested now in something they weren't before. So I totally get what you're saying in regards to the spectrum of success and how each of us as educators feel about that. Can you talk to me a little bit about an impactful moment or a breakthrough that you had with a student or in your career? I mean, I know, Javier, you talked about the student that you just met in New York who has gone on to do a degree and do it in Spanish as well as his other chosen field. Are there other particular impactful moments in your education, either with a student or during a part of your career, that totally reinforced, yeah, this is why I'm staying in education and why I feel like this is a worthwhile and valuable career?
For me, you know, I can't point to one particular moment, but throughout my career, I feel like there are these small moments I get with students and parents that really, really motivate me and keep me going. You know, whether it's a little note from a kid during the holidays, like, you know, wishing you a happy holidays. Thank you for being such a kind and thoughtful teacher, or thank you for having a great class, or getting an email from a parent, or when I bump into them at an event saying, hi, thank you so much for helping my child enjoy this subject so much more. They never felt this confident in this subject in the past. They're really feeling much more engaged and interested in the material, and I feel that at home. And so, you know, just having those little moments of like, you know, sparks with these kids and the parents is always just feels so great to me. And, you know, and then one that I just really continues to push me through those days that were like, you know, yeah, things are getting tough. Maybe I'm feeling like, oh, there's a lot of planning to do, there's a lot of grading to do, you know, but just keeping those moments in the back of my head with these kids and parents really goes a long way to carry me through and push me forward.
Yeah, you can't underestimate what the support of students and parents in their understanding of the job that you have. I know certainly during COVID, we felt that sense of like everybody behind us as educators, all in the trenches together. And it really helped us through such a challenging time. So I certainly hear what you're saying there about validation and recognition for what we do in the classroom. That's fantastic. How about you, Javier?
Yeah. Like, certainly one of the best experiences that I've had in my teaching career is the visits to a local care home in London I do with some of the students. That all started many, many years ago, and it really had an impact on the students and on myself, because it made me realize that teaching and learning doesn't have to happen necessarily just in the classroom, that you can take that beyond the classroom. And, you know, and it hasn't got to be even constrained to your own subjects, because you may wonder, okay, so you're a Spanish teacher and then you're taking a group of students to a care home, you know, to see how the residents live there, like how the carers look after them. It all started as a unit of work that we did in the NYP, looking at personal relationships in families and how health can affect those relationships. And so it happens that we were discussing the role of a person with Alzheimer's. So that is an experience that I really cherish, I treasure to this day, and that every time that I take these students there, I really see a change in them, like almost like an instant change. It's not an easy activity to do, although there's been like great moments of happiness and joy, but also times when I have to be really careful with the students, that just prepare them, you know, just make sure that you feel comfortable to do this activity. And it's something, I suppose the reflection here is that where's the limit, really? You just think about what you can do, you know, and if you're committed enough and if you're lucky enough that you've got the response from the students that they want to take part in an activity like that with you, just go for it, really go for it.
I think we all know as teachers, we're sort of like replacement parents for the time that they are at school with us, and we take that responsibility so seriously. But for the students, seeing us value who they are beyond just a student in the class and doing those things like you're talking about, like taking them outside of the Spanish classroom and saying, here I am as a different person, but who you are in so many different areas is so important. And Zach, I know you do this too, like you show up to go to the middle school games and you do different things outside of the math classroom to sort of show students how you value them as individuals. Can you talk a little bit more about how we as teachers connect to make that success with a students beyond just what we do in the classroom?
Yeah, you know, as I touched on earlier, connection is such a key for me in teaching. And so I really make it a point to try to connect with the students every day, you know, especially like, Mondays, first days of the week. I always try to check in with them about their weekends and let them share with me and the rest of the class just to hear what they've been up to, whether it's trips or just play dates or restaurants they went to, all stuff like that. And of course, you know, always nice to hear, you know, the good stuff, you know, but also I think for them to hear about myself and some of my interests and hobbies outside of work also go a long way to show that, hey, I'm not just a teacher. I am a person just like you. I have my own interests and hobbies. And hey, hopefully we, you know, have something in common in terms of like, we like a similar sports team or we enjoy a similar type of movie. And I think them seeing that and you like, hey, you're not so different from me, it really goes a long way to them buying into you as a teacher and buying into your subjects. And then, like you said, making the time to stop by other events outside of the classroom, such as drama performances, sports, musical events, you know, go a long way to them as well to show you really support them, not just as a math student, but as a child as a whole.
Yeah, they're great ways to really make sure that we're showing them that we are excited to be a teacher and part of their life, and not just for the 45, 55 minutes in a classroom. I do know that sometimes when I'm at the supermarket or somewhere and a student runs into me, there is sort of like shock on their face when they see me. Oh, she's normal and she's buying milk. But on the other hand, I do see, you can see it when you turn up, as you said, to a play, when you turn up to something that they've invested in, how valuable that is to them. So it really is a sign of great teaching, I think, when we go that extra measure to help our students understand how important their lives are to us. What I really want to sort of switch to now is, obviously, you know, I think teaching has become more and more complicated over the years. Many reasons for that are good in the sense of we're figuring out how to work with different diverse learners in the classroom, and we're not just teaching to one group in the class. Can you both describe how you, over your time as an educator, have worked to improve your own skill set in engaging a diverse group of learners and really tailoring what we do in the classroom to meet the needs of all these different students? It's differentiation. And for parents and younger teachers out there who may be listening, this is a really important part of what we do as educators, but it's certainly not an easy process, but one we've become committed to doing. Can you share what you do as really great teachers to help with that personalization?
Okay, well, you did say that obviously we want to learn everything that we can in terms of how to best support our students. The needs are huge, you know, not just in terms of the learning, but also like personal needs as well. And obviously we do a lot of professional development. You know, we have been doing differentiation since, you know, day one of your training, you know, and I think those tools are there. They are effective when you do offer variety in the classroom as well. That definitely you're going to get more engagement as well when you give options, when you differentiate tasks so that the curriculum can be accessible to everybody. That certainly works. But I think at the end of the day, it is going back to how personalized your learning can be. And that may take a little bit of time as well, because you need a little bit of time to get to know your students individually as well, what the struggles might be and the reasons for that as well. What I find really, really effective, and it's really surprised me, and it's one of the best things that I've seen in terms of my experience of how learning really happens very effectively, is when you do have that collaboration with parents as well. When it is like a triad, is that the word? You know, when it's the three of them. And I've experienced that. I've had parents or students approaching me and saying, you know, this is my personal target. How do I get there? And then I've got a parent saying, I'm really, really supportive of this, but I need to know how to do that. So can we work together? When you do that, I mean, the results are pretty incredible, because, yeah, they do spend a little bit of time at school with you, but then they go home and what happens after that, you know? And time is limited. Parents cannot be the second teacher there, but it's really, really helpful, you know, when they get a few tips, a bit of a good understanding of where their child is at and what is it that they can do, you know, in simple terms to support their children in their learning. So I think that is when it really, really works.
Yeah, that homeschool partnership can't be underestimated. I mean, I know perhaps when we were growing up, it was very much like, thanks, parents, we'll take care of your kids and we'll see you at graduation. But it really can't be that. It really needs to be that triangular sort of focus of like student, parents, school. So yeah, it's a really great point. Zach?
I was going to say the biggest thing is, again, to have that partnership with the parents where they can tell you how their child best learns, what's worked in the past, what hasn't worked in the past. But, you know, and like you also mentioned, I'm big on choice, giving the kids different ways to learn, right? Maybe they're more visual, maybe they're more physical, maybe they prefer to do something on their computer, Maybe they're more pen and pencil and paper, you know? I even try to do that with homework sometimes. Some students prefer to do math practice on their computer where they can just get rapid fire questions. Other kids prefer more on paper. They can show their work neatly and write things out. And so as much choice is such big for me. And then lastly, one point I also have is cooperative learning. I love when kids are working with each other. Of course, I want them to be comfortable with each other at first, but also ones that are going to push each other and have similar levels of thinking and learn similarly. That way they can hopefully find the answers on their own and not necessarily rely on me in the classroom. And so to me, pushing the kids to work together, I think, is a good way to also help with the diverse learners that we have in our classroom.
Well, there's also a lot of change happening with technology and AI. I think education is constantly changing itself and should as well, right? But I'd love to ask either of you, you know, how do you feel as a teacher in the classroom? How has technology changed what you teach? And what are the trends that you see in education as teachers that you're really excited about? And Javier, I know you, as a head of department, you're also working with lots of teachers. And Zach, I know you're mentoring teachers too. But what do you see as really exciting in regards to technology and innovation in education?
Well, you mentioned collaboration there. So it is a great way to collaborate with anybody, anywhere in the world. You know, so from the point of view of students, that is a fantastic tool as well. I know there's a push now on doing collaboration across different campuses in our own schools, and that is slowly taking off as well. So it's really, really exciting. Also, between teachers, by the way, if we think about our own professional development as well, you know, it's sometimes we don't realize, you know, that we've got like excellent teachers and professionals, you know, in just in a different campus, perhaps. But, you know, we invest time and money as well in some professional training that, you know, in some cases can be very helpful. What a great idea, you know, maybe to think about, you know, if you've got like, say, language teachers somewhere else and you've heard that they do a really great job at something that they have specialized in, like why not having those connections with them? Then obviously artificial intelligence is a big thing. I am, even though I'm not an expert at all, and I'm quite cautious at the same time, I'm really, really excited about that. I'm one of those people that is not afraid of it. I mean, it is here, it's going to happen, provided that we equip the students, you know, with the tools that they need to be critical about its use and that they can, what they produce as well in terms of their learning is positive for them. Then I don't see that being a big problem. Obviously, it's going to take us time. But if we think back about the years when we had COVID as well, Zach, we were talking, actually, you came to this school and after a few months, you had to go and teach from home. That would have been insane to think about that and how successful we were. You know, it was really, really scary, but it was truly amazing what we could do there. So I look at IA as well. In the same way, you know, I think it is we're going to come up with things and ideas and ways to learn that are very different to what we know now, but hopefully they're going to support it's not going to replace anybody, definitely, because we will go back to connections, which is what we do here, right, as teachers. But yeah, I'm really, really excited about that. I think it's more a blessing than a curse, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, no, for me, Javier took again some of the words out of my mouth in terms of with AI and what that's going to do. But in the classroom, for me, having the smart board capabilities with our iPads has been tremendous as a math teacher. You know, no longer am I turning away from them as I'm writing notes on the board, or like back when I was in school, bringing in a overhead projector, turning up the lights and throwing a laminate on there. You know, now I can front face the kids as we're working on problems together and they could watch me physically doing the problems. I don't have to be necessarily right in front of the board. I could be in the back of the room. I could be on the side helping a student at the same time. So having that flexibility with the iPad and smart board connection has been really helpful and tremendous. And then, yeah, just again, with AI, I feel like it's been helpful in me finding new ways to teach certain lessons. I feel like, that lesson just never quite clicks as well as I hope. Is there another way I could go about showing the kids like how to solve two-step equations? Or, you know, how they use the order of operations in another way that will hopefully get it to click a little bit quicker for them. And so using AI is just a tool to just bounce ideas off of has been very helpful, and one that I continue to, you know, definitely plan to use going forward.
Yeah, there's definitely a growth mindset needed in educators right now as we look at this another big change in education that we're just on the beginning precipice of. But it is, I agree with you, Javier. It's absolutely exciting. We still have to look at it ethically and carefully and make sure that we're putting up the appropriate borders and boundaries so that we are guiding students in the right way. But gee, it's really exciting what we could do and how we can enhance our learning and our professional practice. So I'm really excited about that. Again, if we had young aspiring teachers listening in on this podcast who are just starting out in their careers, what advice would you give them as they are about to embark on those first few years of teaching, if we think back what it was like ourselves, and how to help them sort of forge a really strong career path in education? What advice would you give them, Javier?
Well, the first piece of advice would be to really, really work out whether they want to be teachers or not. I know that sounds like it is a job in which you have to invest so much of yourself that they are, obviously everybody has got a chance to try it, right? So if it is for you, it is for you. If it's not, there are many other jobs that, you know, are equally rewarding as well. But I would say, like, once you have committed to stay in education, you know, just like never give up. You know, because it is a really, really exciting job. It is a job in which you're going to get things out of it that I don't think that you can replicate elsewhere. So just make sure that always, and it's very difficult as well, because being a teacher is not just being a teacher. You know, I think we can have like 100 other tags attached to us, you know, in terms of like many, many different things that we need to do. It's very difficult to get lost in that as well. And I think it's very, very important to remind yourself what you're doing and why you're doing it. So always think back about teaching and learning. What I'm doing here, you know, and the amount of time that it's going to require, is it going to have any impact, any real impact on my students? If it does, then, you know, it might be difficult, but I'm happy to carry it with this. If it doesn't, then, you know, you have to find a way as well to make it work for you. And also very, very important as well, precisely because it is such a demanding job, is always like remind yourself that you're doing a good job, that you're trying really hard, you know, and it is like you should be really, really proud of yourself. And checking, you know, with your loved ones, with the people around you, maybe in the first years, fair enough, you're going to work really hard. You're going to spend a lot of time there planning, marking, thinking how to be the best effective teacher that you can be. But you will be the best effective teacher that you can be only by being the happiest person that you can be. And you have to learn to say, you know, this is work and this is my life. Everything is your life. You know what I mean? But you need to look after yourself as well to make sure that when you walk into that classroom, even if you haven't spent like, you know, more than 20 minutes planning a lesson, you've got the energy, you've got the enthusiasm, you're going to be ready. And you're going to be in a good state because these students deserve that as well. So that would be my advice to them.
So it's a great point. We often talk about finding the sparks of genius, those things that kids love doing. But it's equally important that as adults, we have those elements that inspire us that we can also use with the kids, but keep us sort of very motivated and joyful as well. So that's great. Zach, how about you?
Yeah, for me, a couple of things come to mind. First of all, leaning on your colleagues. You know, being a new teacher, you gotta feed off the people that have been there, people that have been doing the job for a while. Use any and every resource they're able to provide you to help you get going and get started with your career. You know, certainly, you know, you have to acclimate to a school culture. You need to learn how the students, you know, work best. And so leaning on your colleagues for any and anything, I think, is absolutely critical. Secondly, you know, be prepared for some failure. You know, it things are not going to go smoothly. You know, things, even for me, again, I've been doing this a dozen years, not every lesson goes the way I hoped. Not every class goes as I expect. You know, be prepared for that, right? You may have the best ideas in mind, but unfortunately, sometimes it just doesn't quite go your way. And yes, it is frustrating, but you know, again, as Javier said before, you're going to give 110%. You're going to know you're giving your all. And so that's all that really matters, is that you're really there for the kids. You're preparing as much as you can. And yeah, just be prepared again for things to not totally go your way. And so, and one more thing again, just being taken care of yourself. You know, you have to be able to find time at night, over the weekends, take care of yourself, not be so overwhelmed with the work, or you will eventually start to, you know, you may start to not like it as much. And so please take care of yourself.
It's a great point about students and helping them and figuring out, you know, those failure points. And I think when we're transparent, I think it makes us far more human. And it's great role modeling too with the kids that are like, yeah, you're right, this didn't work out. Let's take a different tack with this. Let's figure out, let's find some different research, because I think it really helps model what we need them to do in life, that failure is okay. And from a career perspective, you're absolutely right, as Javier was saying too, just finding that pathway of enjoyment both at work and beyond. But it's a great career path. I mean, there's a reason that the three of us and so many more have stayed in education and love teaching, because we obviously get so much value, and it's so meaningful to be able to work with fantastic colleagues and great students and parents that make the career enjoyable. We are very grateful that you took the education pathway that you both did, and that you've been so impactful on the students that have come across your lives as educators. I mean, when you think about the years that you've been in education, we're talking about hundreds and thousands of students that you've been directly, you know, important to, and who you have helped, and we're incredibly grateful. And thank you so much for sharing with us today your journey through education and giving advice to perhaps the next addition of teachers to the education world. So again, thank you, gentlemen, so much for joining us, and congratulations again for being part of our Torchbearer Awards. We're very grateful.
Thank you, Deanne. This was great. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much to both of you. Cheers.
And that brings us to the end of another episode of Sparking Genius. Again, I'd like to extend a big thank you to Zach Shapiro and Javier Sanchez for sharing their experiences as educators and as recipients of our inaugural Torchbearer Awards. Their dedication, passion, and innovative approaches to teaching truly embody the spirit of the Dwight Global Network. If you found this episode meaningful, we'd love for you to subscribe to Sparking Genius and share it with fellow educators and innovators. Together, we can continue to explore the ideas that are transforming the world of education. I'm Deanne Drew, and I look forward to sparking more genius with you in our next episode. Until then, stay curious and keep pushing the boundaries of what's possible in education.